Heyo, welcome in. Latest episode of that SEC podcast with music by Crimson Calamity, Chris. We got Chris Marler, Marler Monday. What's up, buddy?
No place I'd rather be.
Hey, all these, we're all friends here.
No, we're not. No, we're not. Most people in this comment section can get fucked. I'm happy to be here.
Well, there goes 10 seconds in the first F-bomb. How excited are you for this college football playoff games?
Dude, the bowl games start tomorrow. Like, how exciting is that? I didn't realize it was we were that. Oh, boy. You had Moscone on?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, that was when I was in Moscone's. I was in on his show. Anyway, no, I'm pumped, man. There's bowl games on starting tomorrow, which is great. I might even shave my neck beard, and we'll see. It should be a lot of fun.
Are you surprised at all that Alabama's favored to beat Oklahoma and Norman?
Oh, are we going to start this early?
Yeah.
I'm not, because Allie, take Pepper. Because they
She took your Pepper?
No, she left Pepper in here, so now Pepper's going to start whining here in a minute. Oh. I'm not surprised. I'm a little bit surprised because it's on the road. That is a little bit of a shock. But here's the thing, Mike. If you saw that game last time, you saw how Bama's played the last several weeks, you would probably think, like, yeah, I'm going to I'm probably going to take Oklahoma to win that game. But the line hasn't moved at all. And I think the first day it moved from 1.5 to 2.5 in favor of Bama. So for me, that kind of screams that, like, Vegas might know something. And I've told you this before, Oklahoma fans didn't want to hear it, but, like, if Bama plays a game, like, the way they had going into that game, it was like, okay, Bama's won this many games in a row. They're number one in the SEC at turnover margin at the time. Oklahoma was turning over the ball. John Mateer specifically was turning over the ball at least 1 to 2 times. Felt like every single game. And if they play a clean game, they probably win. Now, they didn't do that, and it happened to be one of, I think, 3 games this year where Oklahoma didn't have a turnover that entire afternoon. Credit Oklahoma. They deserved to win, and they did win. And playing at home, yeah, it is kind of shocking to me that they're not, like, it's not at least a pick 'em. But it kind of tells you what Vegas probably thinks of Alabama.
Yeah. Hey, great question from Tam B, and you're a great guest to bounce this off of because you're a big Bamer. But Cousin Mike, I joke on here all the time, but I have a serious question. Why isn't Pete Golding ever mentioned from the national sports media as one of Saban's guys? Love y'all, cousins. What's your thoughts on that, Chris? Because I know you know all about Pete Golding and his time at Alabama, and they wanted his ass gone, and then defense went in the shitter there for a while. What's your thoughts?
The shitter? I don't remember that.
Do you remember Oklahoma last year?
I didn't think it was that bad.
Tennessee? With Nico?
21 points in that game?
I know, but they missed about 28 more from overthrows.
I can't wait for you. Listen, I've had so many Bama fans that we hung out with in Atlanta personally text me asking about your conversation that you had with them about Diego Pavia. Also, I use the filter from Canva on my face, and it's way too filtery. Are you seeing this? I look like an elf.
Well, you always do.
That's good. That's good.
No, why don't you think Golding is a Saban guy or seen as one?
I don't know. That's a weird question because he should be. I mean, he was there for 5 years. He also, I will stand by this forever. Him and Bill O'Brien got a really bad rap for a lot of stuff that I bet other coaches and coordinators probably would have gotten away with. They just didn't win as much. And I think, like, there's stuff that O'Brien did that was, like, shocking to me, but also you had a top 10 offense in the country, and Golding had a good defense, but it's like there's times where he would drop Will Anderson in coverage instead of having him pin his ears back, and that was shocking to me. And then you think about that Tennessee game in 2022 when Alabama had the ball first and 10 from the 35-yard line of Tennessee, and Will Reichard, for, like, the only time he'd had in 2 seasons, was in a little bit of a slump, missing some field goals. You definitely want to move closer to get him, you know, up, you know, not attempting a 52-yard field goal, and he runs 3 straight pass plays. Now, to his credit, on the second one, he ran an angle route to Jahmyr Gibbs that he would have walked in to score if Jahmyr Gibbs didn't drop it. So I think it's like it's a sliding doors thing with both those guys, where it's like you talk about how awful they are because of some of the big misses they had that Bama fans weren't used to. But I thought Pete Golden was fine when he was at Alabama. I do think that when he was ready to leave, that was a conversation that Saban had with him that was like, by all means, like, you're good to go. Like, so.
Yeah, but and then back to my point, I mean, who did they get to replace him? Wasn't it Kevin Steele? And then they had to take the play calling from him about three games into the season?
Yeah, that was pretty tough. That was pretty tough.
I'm just saying. I don't know. Was obviously Lane Kiffin deserves the lion's share of credit for turning Ole Miss into one of the better programs in the SEC. But they really took it up another level when they got Pete Golding. Don't you think that's fair?
They had 11 draft picks in the last 2 years. 8 of them were on the defensive side of the ball. Like, right. Pete Golding was awesome. I'm excited to see what Pete Golding looks like at Ole Miss. I wrote an article about it. That's a nice mug. Is that a penis on there?
No, mushrooms.
Is that a penis?
Penis shrooms.
Penis shrooms. Hell yeah, dude.
Hey, settle a debate for Shane and I, because Shane's been on one lately.
3 inches.
I think he's been drinking too much or something. Bigger game for Pete Golding. And I think this is obvious, but I want to know what you say. Yeah, Louisville in Nashville or LSU at home?
Probably Louisville.
Really?
Why would LSU be a big game for them?
Lane Kiffin and everything?
I mean, but like if they lose that game, they're probably expected to lose that game.
Yeah, that's what he says. I think it's LSU by a country mile. I think that's the biggest game on the SEC calendar next year.
Could be. Told you. yeah, could be. I don't know. I think it'll be interesting either way. I think them getting that game at home is huge, but I think the expectation for him is a lot lower probably than what's he's probably more playing with house money than what do you call it?
No, see, you remember a couple years ago, and maybe this is not a perfect comp, but a couple years ago when Dan Mullen left Mississippi State to go to Florida, and Mississippi State turned around and hired Joe Moorhead, who he had an outstanding reputation as an offensive coordinator at Penn State. And yeah, the first conference game of the year was Florida at Mississippi State, and Mississippi State had absolutely loaded, probably the best roster they've ever had and will ever have. And Dan Mullen beat them with a Felipe Franks, not a very good Florida team. That's kind of what this, similar to this LSU Ole Miss game next year. Joe Moorhead lost the fan base is the point, like 3 games into his tenure.
Now, I will tell you this, if they go out and get absolutely destroyed, then I think he's in trouble. But I think the bigger thing is for him in year one is not losing multiple games on one weekend. And what I mean by that is like not having one game against LSU cost you multiple games, like whether you're looking ahead to that game or you're sitting here trying to figure out what went wrong and having it affect you in multiple games throughout the season.
I got you. Emily suggests you should do a bump to get that energy.
What did I do? Emily, you're like the nicest person in the chat. What the fuck did I do? I seem off.
Let's go back to the playoff.
Yeah. Let's do it.
who do you have more confidence in going into this matchup? Ty Simpson or John Mateer?
John Mateer, especially without having to put as many things on tape. I think for Bama, you look at what happened at Georgia game. You would sit here a lot of times and say like, oh man, well maybe this is something that like you can just throw away and it's like you just like forget that loss and whatever. But I mean, Brent Venables, like the calling card of that Oklahoma team is their defense. I'm sure he'll look at that tape a lot and try to figure out a couple of things that he can emulate and kind of mirror what that Georgia did. And then if you're Mateer, if Ty Simpson goes into this game after playing Auburn, he's probably a lot more confident than he is playing Auburn and Georgia. And I don't know how much truth there is to any of his like injury rumors, but I do think that he has that I think that he's come into this final leg of the season, and he's lost a lot of confidence. There's reports or rumors around what do you call it about Alabama and Ty Simpson, like not just the injury stuff, that he's just kind of lost confidence, where he's kind of seeing ghosts. I see that a ton. He's had happy feet a bunch, I think, in the last half of the last month of the season, even when he's being protected. Now, I will tell you this too. I keep maintaining that there are things that can happen with Ty Simpson where his confidence can kind of turn on a dime if a couple of things happen. Like you look at the Georgia game. The Georgia game, this would have mattered in the long run, but if you look at early on in that game when they're like the 45-yard line, he throws a deep out route to Isaiah Horton on like the 32-yard line. If that ball is caught, it's first and 10 from the 32. You're probably at least somewhat in field goal range. And then you can start like moving the ball forward down 7-0 and feel a lot better about where you are. The ball's knocked away. The next two plays, he's running for his life. And I think the third pass, he gets intercepted. There's like little, just like I said earlier, sliding doors of what he could be doing in or what like the offense could be doing around him that would make him feel a lot more confidence. There's wide open passes he's missed. He missed one against Oklahoma where I think it was Jeremy Bernard probably walks into the end zone and was like on a third and 10 or something like that. If he hits him in stride, there's just little things like that I think if he hits those passes or the passes are caught, Ryan Williams is a big part of that. The offense is probably a lot more confident than what they have going on currently.
Right. And shout out to somebody in the comments saying, you know, it's baffling. Neither one of these teams can run the football.
Yeah.
Which one does that concern you more heading into this matchup, though?
Well, quick shout out to Monkey of 423 for the kind words. Personally, dislike Marler. I hardly ever catch a show live. Just came to add that, man. That means the world to me. I hope you and your fucking porcelain doll that you call a wife have a great night tonight by yourself, die alone. Anyway, I trust Oklahoma's run game better because I think Bama's weaker in run defense at times. And also Jim Miller's coming off an injury. There's just not a lot of like when's the last time, Mike, you saw a drop off to the excess that we saw from running back one and two to three and four in Atlanta, like them starting like Kevin Riley being out, Jim Miller being out, and then them having, who was it? I can't even think of the name, Daniel Hill, and then A.K. Deer. I just assumed, like, you're talking about A.K. or A.K. Deer is a former five-star, speedster, all that kind of stuff. It's like, well, truly the drop-off won't be that bad. It was horrible. Like, it was horrible. So, yeah, I mean, I think you got a lot of question marks there for Bam in the run game and the run D. And the biggest thing, too, is they haven't run the ball on anybody all year.
Right. Are you concerned at all that old Venables owns the boring?
No, I'm not. That's cute that you put it on Twitter. I saw that.
What if he's 0 for 3 against him? I mean, you have to admit that's a trend.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think the biggest thing for Alabama they have going into the playoff is one of the reasons why the committee put him in there. Because they're not Notre Dame, pussies. No,
it's the logo.
Because the logo. That's one of my favorite things people say about Bama, just because like the logo on the helmet was different, and it's just like it's just two numbers. You fucking idiots! I get it, but still. No, I think. Thank you. I love you too, Dakota BFL. I think it's fucking cold too. Yeah, somebody put that this Chappy Monday. It's very cold. I think the thing that this team has going forward that really people did not want to talk a lot about in Atlanta, which it was really bad. It was a really bad, but here's the thing too, that people want to forget. If you sit here, like Oklahoma, A&M, Ole Miss, all of those teams got the luxury of sitting their fucking ass at home and not playing in that game. And not only did Alabama go into that game as a team playing for an SEC championship, they went into it as the one seed. They got their ass kicked for sure. A lot of teams do when you get to play Kirby Smart the second time in the same season. Texas had the same shit happen to them. They lost. And Texas, from what last time I gathered, didn't have five backups in and five starters out going into that game. Bama having Josh Cravis back, having two injured offensive linemen back, getting Jim Miller back at starting running back, I mean, outside of LT Overton, it seems like everybody is kind of back in the fold, and where they haven't really been. They've been really banged up over the last month of the season. That you can go into that and say it's an excuse or whatever the fuck you want to do, because Bama's never going to ever get the benefit of the doubt when it comes to not excuses but reasons as to why some things might happen, especially with injuries. But I do expect to see a very different team going into this game.
How many offensive points will it take to win this football game for either team, you think?
Oh, it's going to be awful, dude. It's going to be fucking miserable.
Like, will 20 do it, you think?
No, I don't think either team gets a 20. I think it's 17-9. It's going to be a fucking Iowa and Rutgers. It's going to be awful.
17-9.
It's going to be terrible, dude. Terrible. So, I mean, but here's the other thing, too. And again, this game was at home, so it's probably a little bit different. But, like, I mean, Ty Simpson and Bama, like, how good is this Oklahoma defense?
Elite,
right?
Mm-hmm.
How did Alabama's offense look against them?
They actually moved the ball pretty well.
They did, Mike. They did. People forget in this game. Hold on, I'm pulling it up right now. I'm pulling it up and pulling out. In this game, they gave up 406 yards of offense to a pretty bad offensive team. They gave up 431 against Ole Miss and 456 against Tennessee. Those are the only three teams they gave up over 400 yards against. If you want to take that a step further, there were only five teams total this year they gave up over 300 yards against, and that was Texas and Missouri, who had 302 and 301 respectively. Bama's offensive performance, I said this when it happened, Ty Simpson is a interception away from having like his Heisman moment in that game. Like they were, I think they had 200 something yards passing in the first half alone in that game. I thought he looked really good. Now, but the confidence that's happened since then has waned very, very badly. And I think the other thing is too, now you've also got John Mateer, who's more of a gunslinger type player that has like everyone in his ear about how he's the weak link of this team. I think it'll be really interesting to see what he does against a team that is like not been great against stopping the run, not been great against stopping running quarterbacks. They're really good in the secondary, in the back seven. But I mean, who's to say this guy doesn't run wild?
Do you anticipate anything from Ryan Williams, or is he just kind of, is he 18 and now no one cares?
Usually the opposite of that. You know what I mean? At least with the movies me and you watch. Heyo.
What the hell happened to that guy?
Didn't Auburn outgame Bama? What is that? Hold on. I got to read the comments here. This is a confident fellow. I didn't say they were going to win. I'm basing everything off of the game they already played against each other, you morons. Like, how? I don't understand what Oklahoma fans want to hear. It's like Georgia 2022, just horny for disrespect. Like, you better fucking disrespect us. And if you show us too much respect, that's also a sign of disrespect. Like, what? Like, hey, you guys won the game. You deserve to win the game. You were really good. Hey, also in that game, Bama did some things that were pretty well. Oh, you better not. It's not a hypothetical. They already played on the fucking field, morons. Like, mm-hmm. What are we talking about? No, Bama fans are much worse, Emily Powell. The question you had earlier, what was it? No, I'm not gay. Let's see here. I love you too. What was the question?
Who do you got more? Who's winning this game? How about that? Are you ready to make a prediction?
Oklahoma by at least 10.
Ooh,
Bama doesn't have a chance. Listen, here's the thing, Mike. On the road at a place, dude, when's the last time Oklahoma even lost at home? It's probably not recent, right? Probably years ago. Oh, it was last month? Oh, okay. But it
could have been the last game against LSU, too.
They probably didn't play anyone else close there all year because they were blowing teams out. Oh, the LSU game. Well, they probably – oh, in the Missouri game? Well, but Missouri probably had their starting quarterback in that whole time. But I bet there was never other game this year, Mike, where Auburn or anyone else had to use the refs to help them win. There's no way Oklahoma doesn't win this game. Oklahoma's winning a national championship, dude. They're the best team I've ever seen this side of Mississippi.
Yeah, I think yeah, you
I, do,
it.
I do think that I do think if someone said a Mississippi State fan said last year Bama scored a field goal in Norman and blew the playoffs. So I want to correct one thing here. It's actually called the playoff, and I wouldn't expect a Mississippi State fan to fucking know the difference. But it's just the playoff. It's not plural. It's only one playoff. It happens every year. It's the playoff. Just the one. But get ready. Baseball season's only 50 days away. What else we got?
How about Miami A&M? Any thoughts on this matchup? I think this could be a really good one, too.
There's kids in here? Fuck them kids. They shouldn't be in here anyway. It's rude to do the knuckle shuffle on live videos. It's probably even more rude to call it the knuckle shuffle. I didn't know it was called that. I think this is the game of the weekend. This game is going to be awesome. I think it's going to be very high scoring. I think it's going to be multiple teams that are, I can't stop reading the comments. Don't talk shit to me, South Carolina Marler or two teamer SC and LSU Marler. Yeah, some of us have jobs to talk about sports, dude. We don't only talk about one team. How do you not get that watching that SEC podcast? How fucking dumb do we have to be? Anyway, Merry Christmas. So here's the thing. I think that this game will be, love you, Sven, just kidding. I think that this game is going to be awesome for a number of reasons. I don't think either defense is good enough for four quarters to stop either offense for four quarters. I think it's going to be very high scoring. I think, like, when I say very, I mean, like, 34-30 type game. I think it's interesting because I think that if you look at everything that you're posting, I think it's great. I think that Miami has the upper the upper hand in a lot of this. Like I think Miami's going to go into this game. I think they're going to be able to make a lot of plays early. I think they're going to have a massive chip on their shoulder. I think they're going to be able to stop Cassius Howell, especially with especially in this cold, Brodo. I think there's going to be it's going to be a lot closer than they think. But here's the thing that usually games like this come down to. Okay. It's how about that for a knuckle shuffle? So I think that games like this usually come down to a couple things: quarterback play and coaching. And what we have seen from Carson Beck when he's on is great. It's really great. But over the past two seasons, a lot of times in big moments, he's not on. He's not great. And I think that, do not clip that mic. I swear to God, I'll never do the show again. I think that the other thing too is Mario Cristobal. I think he's grown a lot as a coach, but that growth is from shit that's like, hey, Mario, the game's over. Just take a knee. And he's like, no way, over my fucking dead body. And then to like knowing that he can just take a knee. It's not, how do I put teams away? How do I prepare for a team to go into a hostile environment? They're very lucky this game's being played at 11 a.m. And then going into a hostile environment and figuring out a way to beat one of the best teams in the country. I don't think that we have that out of Mario Cristobal yet. I think Mike Elko, even though he's very young in his head coaching tenure, keep in mind, this is a guy that has only been a head coach. I think this is year six, or maybe it's even less than that. Maybe it's year five. And he has never had never had the high profile jobs as Mario Cristobal. I think that he's going to be able to outlast Mario Cristobal. And I think they ended up winning 34-30.
34-30, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Got you, DeBreezy.
What about this though? Because you are the champion of A&M. Ain't played nobody.
They are.
If they lose to Miami, does it validate all that they ain't played nobody aside from Notre Dame?
I guess. I mean, it's not they haven't played anybody. They haven't beaten anybody since Notre Dame. Like, I mean, look at the middle of that schedule. LSU was the big one, and LSU turned out to be cheeks, man. They were terrible. They were 7-5. And then they
fired the coach immediately thereafter.
Should have lost to South Carolina, one of my eight favorite teams. You know, even that Samford game, brother. No, I'm kidding. I don't have a feel on the Samford game. I do think the loss to Texas was pretty illuminating. I mean, you're going to have some guys that are going to come out there from A&M that are going to be wanting to make a name for himself. But I also think that when you look at like what each team is made of, the core of each team is pretty similar, because we look at Miami as like a mercenary, like a team full of mercenaries. And that's kind of what A&M has become. I know Marcel Reed's been there, but that whole receiving core, they're all guys you brought in. I'm sure they believe in A&M. They want to win the game on Saturday, but I don't think either one of these teams is like, we got to put this program on our back, anything like that. I think that you're looking at one of the cool moments, I think, in the NIL and portal era, because it's two, not blue bloods, because only one of them's a blue blood, but like two very, very nostalgia-ridden programs and universities that are going to play each other in a massive, massive game. And I think that the biggest thing that either one of them has overcome is all of the shit talk that we say constantly in the offseason. Whoever loses this game, no matter how good the season was, whoever loses this game, they are going to be deduced to the same shit talk that we have every single offseason. I think that'll be very interesting to see who can get rid of that. Because, listen, A&M was sitting there 8-0, and there were still people that were like, oh, they could still go. They could still go 8-4. You never know.
Right.
And anything about Miami, how many times they have kind of fallen or gone off the rails late in the year when they've had a chance. I mean, they're lucky to even be here.
How big do you think home field advantage will be, though? Because I believe, and I could be mistaken, but I'm pretty sure this is accurate, I think the home teams won all the games last year in the playoff.
Hold on. Somebody's upset about the comments about Bama.
Uh-oh.
They said that we broke y'all. Bitch, shut the fuck up. Just shut the fuck up. We broke y'all. This is a program that has two. Buddy, let me be as clear as possible. Brent Venables, the scary skeleton thin man, has as many wins against Alabama in the last 20, I'm sorry, the last 14 calendar months as Georgia does in the last 20 fucking years. Calm down, Jackson. Calm down. Calm the fuck down. Geez, Louis says, I'm lucky to be here. That's fair. Very fair. Anyway. We broke y'all. Georgia fans are so fucking weird, dude. There's no weirder fan base on social media that's like, I'm posting a pump up video. I hope Kirby sees it. Knuckle shuffle. Love it. Love it. Wish I had to make that face when I did it, but here we are. Two asterisk titles since Kirby left. Didn't he beat y'all's ass in one of those in the same building that y'all just won the SC championship? Anyway, yeah, I don't say, I just want to let you know, Jackson, I didn't say any of that out of love at all. Anyway, Mike, you were saying
the home field, how big will home field be? Because I think last year, the home teams were undefeated in the playoff. I'm pretty sure.
I mean, what sucks is this, man, you're looking at like, it's a two game playoff. Like nobody gives a shit about the other two games the first weekend. No one cares about Ole Miss, Tulane. No one gives a shit about Oregon, JMU. That game sucks. It's the only game I think played like outside of A&M, like west of the Mississippi. And I think that's right. No, Oklahoma's west of the Mississippi. I'm good at geography. But like you're gonna be, they only got the night game because of that. And it's like this fucking sucks. Like this entire slate on Saturday blows because you only get three games the entire afternoon, and only one of them matters. So I think that home field advantage is going to play a pretty big role in the other two, but mainly because those teams are severely overmatched. I don't know if that's the same for the first two. Like you said, like Bama's favored in one of those, and I don't think Miami is a either way.
So you're not anticipating Tulane Ole Miss being much of a fight here?
It wasn't last time. I mean, and now Tulane has, well, I guess they both have a half a coach, but I mean,
right.
No, I think Ole Miss is going to come out in whatever the first half line is in that game. I will hammer that. Like, I think Ole Miss is going to come out with their hair on fire, trying to prove a massive, massive point to everybody in the college football playoff. Trying to figure out like the things they either should have dropped or that they were only good because of Lane Kiffin. I think they have so much to prove. And that first half, they're going to come out and try to prove all of it all at once. I think they're going to kill Tulane.
That's kind of like you. You come here, you got something to prove every week, right?
Not at all. Not at all. I try to come in here with a can-do attitude, believe it or not, every week. And then some fucking jack-off says something that I don't like in the first couple minutes, and I have to respond.
I feel like you came out firing this time.
Yeah, it's Christmas season.
It's true. Speaking of Christmas,
some of these people are being bitches.
Diego Pavia got cold for Christmas. What was your thoughts on Pavia getting robbed at the Heisman ceremony?
So I wrote an article about this today. Diego Pavia, he like represents so many things. Hold on. This is for work. Talk amongst yourselves.
They're calling. Let's see what else they're calling you right now.
Probably fat and gay or something, like every week.
Yeah, you pretty much nailed it.
Yeah, every week. You guys got to get some material, man. Who's this fat, gay, fatter, fat guy? No, so I think that he is a story that is awesome for so many people in college football. Like a zero-star recruit with zero D1 offers, only two offers out of high school, both of them to D2. A kid that was a JUCO player that who wasn't even being recruited by New Mexico State until the national championship, the JUCO national championship game, when they were only watching because they were recruiting the other guy. And he ends up going not only to New Mexico State and finally playing there, he ends up going to Vanderbilt. No one had ever heard of him before. He's this undersized. I always called him Husky Johnny Manziel. He's this undersized dude that goes in and then he beats Alabama. It's the first time Vanderbilt had beaten Alabama in 40 years. Then he goes and beats Auburn. He takes him to a bowl game. And then all offseason, when everyone was laughing at him, he was like, no, we're going to contend for a national championship and a playoff spot. We're going to go do this whole thing again. And all of that culminates into a season where he has 36 touchdowns, 8 interceptions, over 4,000 yards, and deserves to be in New York for the Heisman. And what should have happened in New York this weekend was he could have taken a step back and been like, man, like, what a fucking story. What a story that I have created for myself, and it should have been a culmination of all of his achievements. It should have been, and I don't care about him having the AirPod shit over his ear. I don't care that he dressed differently than the other guys. Like all that is stupid, and it seems like very antiquated opinions about somebody just based off of something you don't like personally. I don't give a shit about that. What I do give a shit about is, we have sat here for 2 years and we have given this kid something that not a lot of other people get, and that's excuses. We have given him excuses for his behavior constantly because it's like, no. He has to do that because that's the competitive mindset he has to have to get on that level to go win games. I played fucking college sports. I didn't play at his level, but I didn't sit there and have to make everyone's out to get me. I better grab my fucking dick at the student section so everybody sees me beforehand, and that's how I have to get on this next level. Nobody else has to do that. Nobody else. Baker Mayfield did it when he was mad in a game, but he didn't do it at the student section before. Like, we've had villains all the time. This is going to be my 5-minute rant since there's not as much to talk about South Carolina. It's bad. You had villains in college football forever. Jameis Winston, Baker Mayfield, Lane Kiffin. Before the last month, all three of those guys were able to turn that narrative around into becoming a likable person and or player. Kiffin, not so much. He kind of ruined that when he went to LSU. But like, they all gave themselves an opportunity to turn that around, mainly because they didn't want to be dickheads and hated by everybody in the country. And I don't think he cares that he's hated by everyone in the country. And there's something to be said for that, Mike. There really is. But for him to go to New York and sit there, and I thought, I was shocked that he finished second. He should have finished second or maybe first, but I was shocked that he finished second. And what he could have done was taken that moment to say, man, there is a legacy that I'm going to leave in Nashville and cement in my place in college football and say, you could be undersized. It's basically what fucking Fernando Mendoza said during his speech. Everyone that's a no star, they're under recruited, guys that are overlooked. I'm you. And this is a great moment for people like this. And it could have been that moment. But he's too much of an egotistical prick to sit here and say, hey, how do you not make it about myself? How do you sit here and go out of the spotlight for a moment and just enjoy the fucking fruits of your labor? And instead, what he did was go to the most high-profile place in the fucking world, get bottle service that said, fuck Indiana, give it the middle finger in the middle of it, then make sure to double down, because he could have said, oh, that was just an inside joke. He could have made up any excuse about it, and somebody would have eaten it up. Because all we've done for this kid is give excuses for his fucking behavior for the last 2 years. And instead, he had to double down and go on his own Instagram and be like, fuck the voters. Like, how stupid and self-absorbed do you have to be? Like how self-absorbed and clueless? And it's not like he's a kid. He's 24 years old. Like, you're older than everyone else there by at least a year. And you had to sit here and make every single possible thing about you. And it's so fucking sad and disheartening, because at some point, do you think Clark Lee would ever fucking talk, like would ever do that in front of a camera? Everything that Clark Lee says is, I tell you what, the whole fucking house is decorated. The Clark Lee sits there and says, we'll spot the ball, we'll play tomorrow. Like we want to play, we want to compete. And I think there's a part of Diego Pavia that is probably like that. But we have sat here and given this kid such a long leash of what's allowed at breathe. It's with an extra E, you dumb fuck. It's, we've given him such a long leash of like what he's allowed to do. Cause I think in his mind, he is sitting here saying, you know what? I'm basically Johnny Manziel just 10 years later. No, you're not. Cause you know what he had a little bit more of than you do. And not just a Heisman Trophy. He had a higher ceiling than you. He was able to get away with shit like this because he was still going to be a first round draft pick. And then he could figure out ways to self-sabotage and get in his own way. You're way ahead of the game on him on that. And that fucking, just like your height, the ceiling that you have is much lower to where the floor is when it comes to Diego Pavia and his actual talent. And so I see all these memes that are like, oh, in 3 years, he's going to be at a fucking Chevy dealership and all that kind of stuff. And it kind of breaks my heart a little bit because it might be true. But this kid has been it's not going to fuck up his draft status, Mike, because he doesn't have any. Like he was always going to be day three or an undrafted free agent. And I bet he's going to go into a minicamp and he's going to bust his ass and he will probably end up somewhere playing football after this. But he's done himself such a disservice by going into this whole fucking like moment and making him like you think about the story again, Mike. You think about the story again. Unrecruited, zero star quarterback. Nobody wanted out of high school, goes to JUCO, only one place wanted him, goes there, kills it, beats Auburn, goes into the SEC, beats Alabama, turns the doormat of this fucking conference into a 10-win season. And amidst all that, the impossible thing that was in front of him wasn't any of those accomplishments. It was somehow making the story unlikable. And he fucking managed to do it once again this weekend.
Hey, shout out all day. Trey gave us $10. Marler, big fan. Love the humor. Thanks, and honesty. Don't let any of the negative Nancy's get you stirred up. Go, I Dogs.
And I love Jackson. Merry Christmas.
So, yeah, tell us how you really feel.
I love this sport so much. And there's so many good fucking stories in the sport. And we have dedicated so much time to his for what? Like, for what? So, it drives me crazy that we let this kid. I mean, how many fucking times did we have to see? please put that up here. Let me put that up here real quick. God loves comics. Put the comment up here.
This one.
Literally anybody can spew expletives like a drooling rabid chimp. But let me explain something to you. God loves comics, who apparently doesn't love all comics. Here's the thing. You don't go watch them talk. And what you're doing right now is watching me talk. So sit down and shut up. How was that? How did we do? I'm out of focus.
Yeah, what happened?
It's just the camera.
It's like autofocus or something?
Gay focus. No, we just spent a lot of time talking about this kid this year, and I felt like he took a giant shit on all of it this weekend. It really bums me out.
Mm. Well, I know what doesn't bum you out. That's Sellers coming back to Carolina. Carolina, I think getting Kendall Browse, getting an offensive line coach, getting Sellers back, and I, from what I hear, Chris, maybe you could tell me different. I hear Dylan Stewart's coming back. Carolina, I think, is the biggest winner of the offseason so far in the SEC.
Allie said, "Damn, brother," from the other room. So it's probably not good. So here's the thing.
Ronnie says, "Not even your camera likes listening."
That's good. That's good. So, dude, I think that's also very good. That was really good. I think that it's not cliche to say that he has that Shane Beamer's won the offseason so far. And now the offseason's only 2 weeks old, and he's been able to do that because he wasn't playing for a postseason.
Right. So they got an unfair head start.
Yes. Yeah, very, very fair. Jackson, no one's upset with you. I love you. It's always good to hear from you. No one's upset. And now Jeez Louise is putting an extra E at the end of every single comment. That's a good one too. Spoke 420, tires, BBQ guns. That's a lot of names. All right, back to the Shane Beamer thing. I don't think it is hyperbolic to say that he has won the offseason so far. Part of that's because he did get a bit of a head start because he's not playing in a bowl game. I thought it was awesome. I thought the fact that he was able to figure out a way to keep Dylan Stewart, to keep Lenore Sellers for one. Here's the biggest thing, though, man. All the stuff that he was trying to do this offseason, you think about like the piece by piece and like, not to use a fucking Butch Jones thing, but brick by brick thing that he had to do to build this thing. I maintain that he was very close. If one thing goes wrong, this thing slides off the rails almost immediately. Because if you don't get Sellers, you probably don't get Stewart. You don't keep Sellers if you don't make the right offensive coordinator hire. You don't get the right offensive coordinator hire if you don't let him help with the other hires. And then you look at like what he's been able to do, and it's like, okay, well, who's he looking for as the OC? And I think just like a lot of South Carolina fans, my thought was, okay, here's the thing. Go get the guy from Utah. He sounds great. Go get the guy from East Carolina. He sounds great. Go get this guy. Cause it's like, no matter what the numbers you were going to be like, you were going to be comparing from their resume that you're bringing in versus what you already had, that outside resume was going to look like fucking gold. It was like, oh my God, like you scored how many points a game? More than 20? What? They can do that? Like it was, that's how bad the offense was this year under Mike Shula. And I think that being able to go out and say, all right, listen, is it going to be the guy from Utah? Is it going to be the guy, like I said earlier, is it Old Dominion? Is it the guy from East Carolina? And there was a part of a lot of us, I think, that was like, well, maybe they'll go out and just go ahead and get the guy from Old Dominion and bring his quarterback in because Sellers is gone. And they kind of just wrote off this whole process. And then all of a sudden, Beamer comes in and gets arguably the best name you could have gotten from an offensive coordinator. A guy that has like helped, like.
I thought you'd like that one.
That's good. I appreciate that, brother. It's always cool to come up with a name like College Football Uncensored and see other people come up with similar names to it and make a whole brand out of it. But we'll talk about that some other time. I think the him going to get Briles, a guy that's been an offensive coordinator and a play caller for 11 years, and then sit here and say, hey, can you do what you've done at TCU, what you've done at Florida State, Florida Atlantic, Houston, Baylor, Arkansas, all of those places you did a better job than what we currently have. And you've like have such a unique offensive style that it's created like these little like trickle down effects into other people's offenses. Lane Kiffin, he said about in his press conference, he was like, I met with Kendall and Art Briles and how, you know, talked about what they were able to do from an air raid offense or like in pre-snap motion and all this other stuff and take little parts of that and then put it in our offense. These are all things that South Carolina has been lacking. And then you're like, okay, well, you get him. So now you get an offensive line coach, which cannot be worse than what you had. And then who are you going to get for a running backs coach? Oh, you're going to go get a guy that's currently the running backs coach at Penn State. And then on top of that is a guy that has brought in such recruits as like Chris Rainey, Cam Newton, all these other guys when he was down at Florida, knows the region, has been a coach for over 30 years and 13 different stops in college and the NFL. And then you go pitch that to Sellers and he says, yeah, I'm in for that. And because here's the biggest thing. There's a lot of Carolina fans that said, you know what? Dangles his feet. Bitch, I'm 6'1". What? there's a lot of Carolina fans that were like, if he goes, it's whatever. And his numbers this past year, I get why. But at the same time, the biggest thing that you could have cost you, I feel like, if you're Beamer, is having to potentially face Lenore Sellers or watch him go develop somewhere else and then be really good and figure out, why couldn't we do that here? And now you've given every single opportunity for him to develop at home at a place he loves, 70 miles from his hometown in Florence, great Buc-ee's, and figure out a way to go make this thing work one last time.
Hey, thoughts on this? Because you'll have a unique perspective. Shout out Cousin Bo here. Elko just named Holloman Wiggins the new offensive coordinator. He was at Bama, I believe, as a receivers coach. Really good job, I think, coaching receivers.
Really?
But never play caller here. So that's interesting.
Yeah. I mean,
did you not like him at Alabama? I'm trying to remember. I mean, weren't they always stacked at receiver?
I mean, yeah. I mean, I think there's some things that could have gone better from a receiver standpoint this year. You saw maybe the biggest regression of one star receiver that of anywhere else in the country.
What, at Bama this year?
Yeah, Ryan Williams.
Right. But Holloman Wiggins has been at A&M during that time. He's been coaching the receivers there at A&M.
Well, I didn't know that. Why'd you say Alabama?
He was there a couple years ago under Saban.
Take your shirt off. well, then it sounds like he was also still to blame for Ryan Williams. I'll die on that hill, brother.
Okay.
One thing I'm not going to do is say sorry.
What about maybe something you're more familiar with, DJ Lagway getting the boot down in Gainesville, it sounds like.
Dude, so what's interesting about that is I saw our buddy bring this up, and I think it's a really good point. Everyone keeps talking about his other potential landing spot in the SEC is LSU, right? Like, you saw Kiffin retweet the whole thing. Maybe he was trolling, maybe not.
I don't think he fits what Kiffin wants to do. Do you?
I don't think he does either. You know where he does fit?
Where does DJ Lagway fit?
Tennessee.
No, he doesn't fit in Tennessee.
Yes, he does. No. Throwing the deep ball, nobody did it better than him his freshman year. That's the whole offense.
No, they wouldn't want him. Trust me.
You're fucking dumb. I think it's that. I think it's Tennessee.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't think so. Things.
I got to catch my breath. I got 12 more minutes. And then I'm going to do my own show with Alyssa Lang, brother.
Oh, wow. How'd you get her on the show?
More friends.
You have friends?
I used to.
She's coming on your show?
Yeah.
What are you going to ask her?
Hey, did you see what all those mean people said to me on Mike's show? Did you? What did you think of that? You don't think I'm any of those things, right?
Well, do you think Florida will upgrade at quarterback?
No. What?
You don't think so?
Not from a talent standpoint.
I mean, aren't you the guy that was like, this guy sucks, he's overrated?
And then I said he's the most overrated player in America coming into the season. And I was
you meant to put a question mark, you said, after you got all this hate.
No.
I think you re-put it out with a question mark.
God put it out there the way it was supposed to.
and then he sucked. And then you're like, hey, remember when I didn't do the question mark? And I know exactly what you did.
People don't forget. yeah, that's tough. That one guy quit Twitter.
I think he quit at media because you were so right.
Well, never mind. I'm going to say that. That's a lot. Yeah, he was a bitch, though.
I almost said that same thing, but I was like, that's a bridge too far.
Bill O'Brien deserved the criticism. Matt Patricia was a better OC than him. I'm not going to sit here and argue about the Patriots because it's a show about SEC football. I will tell you that watching grown adult people that cover this sport sit here and talk about how bad Mac Jones was when the greatest coach of all time, Bill Belichick, gave him in year two a fucking defensive coordinator as his offensive coordinator. Did you know this, Mike?
Yeah.
He was his offensive coordinator, and he'd made a Pro Bowl his rookie year. And then he has this massive regression, and they were like, no, that's terrible. That's terrible. Why would they ever do that? Anyway. Oh, yeah, we got to talk about Michigan.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I forgot all about that. What's your thoughts on Sherrone Moore and being the all-time Michigan man?
Can I give you my actual guttural, knee-jerk, inappropriate response?
Please.
It's like, fuck Michigan, dude. Like Michigan and their fans have this very real sense of, we're so much fucking better than everyone. Michigan, man. Michigan. We're the Ivy League of public schools. What you are is a cesspool for fucking dog shit morals and ethics that has happened over and over and over again when Jim Harbaugh was there. Then he gave this huge endorsement to Sherrone Moore, who cheats on his wife and three kids and with this woman. And it is so blatantly terrible about it. Everyone in the program knew, and all of a sudden, you're sitting here and saying afterwards, it's like, well, we were gonna release all the information, but we had to wait until a certain time. I don't care if they waited until signing day or not. It's despicable that they waited at all, considering now what's happening with this program. And I tell you, the program that deserves the least amount of happiness, the program that deserves the least amount of bright futures to look forward to is Michigan, because Jim Harbaugh came in here. They cheated their way to stealing signs. I don't give a shit about the hamburgers he was buying. I wish I was there for that. But him buying recruits, cheeseburgers, whatever, don't care about that. But you did it all while looking down your nose at SEC teams and the rest of the country, acting like you were better than them. And not only were you not better than them, you were running just this grossly, I wouldn't say corrupt, but grossly morally bankrupt program that was disgusting from the inside out, and still had the audacity to point the finger at all the other people that were in the wrong or weren't as good as you because of how you viewed yourselves. Michigan has always been a program that has looked down their nose at everyone else in the entire country, and they are getting what they deserve. I hope they don't get a fucking head coach. I hope that girl ends up being the head coach at this point. Or Dave Portnoy. The loudest one in the room is the weakest one in the room. And Michigan has been the loudest one in the room forever.
Damn, beat Alabama one time, and you just go off the rails.
I think they beat them twice.
Oh, yeah. Well, because they were cheating. So
yeah. That
makes sense. Speaking of cheating, how much money ballpark do you think LSU is going to be spending in this portal?
20. I mean, you're also going to be, that's fair, Emily Powell. That's pretty good. who is boss? Who is boss? Not who's boss. Who is boss? So it'd be WHO'S. Yes, that is a good point. Cherokee Choach is still on the first argument of the day. I think they'll give him about 20 million. No, what's going to be really interesting, Mike, out of this whole thing is, I think the same is for Pete Golding, is with new coaches, what you're going to see, and there's a lot to pay up front. There's, you got to have the buyouts from the previous coach. You got to bring in a new coach. You can spend all this money on. But one of the things you're also going to see, especially at a situation like LSU and Ole Miss, is you're not going to want to see this be a slow burn. Like your boosters are not going to sit there and I think at Ole Miss especially, and say, well, if he doesn't win out of the gates, it's understandable. It would be understandable. But you also don't want to see your ex-coach at a rival at LSU get off to a better start than you. So you're going to see this reinforced and reinvigorated attitude, I think, especially when it comes to spending at some of these places, where they're like, hey, we're LSU, we're Ole Miss. We've been really good at this the past couple of years. We're going to continue to be really good at this, and we're going to go figure out a way to buy the best players so we can hit the ground running. Because now you don't have any more excuses. Kurt Cignetti has ruined that for everybody. He went from JMU to Indiana, took most of his recruits and players from JMU, plugged them into a big Power Four team and said, we're going to go play and compete for a national championship right away. And now he has the best team in the country, in my opinion. I don't care about the schedule as much. I think they have the best team in the country right now. And they're going to go play. And I've thought this for 2 months, as much as I hate to say it. Yes, that is a very good point. I didn't pick it out, to be very clear. I didn't pick it out to be very clear. I think that he is going to sit here and he is, or he's going to be in Indiana, and he's probably for a long time, but he has ruined the, well, just give me a couple more years to figure, like the Hugh Freeze method that people have tried to take that approach to a lot of places, which is, I think, a fair approach, especially in Michigan. That seems to kind of be pretty hand in hand, or hand in dick approach that they took there. I think that you're going to see that fall by the wayside, because you've proven that you can win and win at the best level. Dude, like, do you think about the optics of this, Mike? It's not like he took over Oregon and they won right away. Like, he took over Indiana, and then in right away was able to get them to the number one ranking in a Heisman Trophy and on the doorstep of a potential national championship.
No, I think that's completely fair. Hey, final thing for you.
I'm not a Democrat.
Of these teams,
I'm a liberal.
SEC teams that are playing this weekend in the college football playoff, Bama at Oklahoma, of course, and Ole Miss hosting Tulane, A&M hosting Miami. Which one of the SEC teams playing this weekend do you have the most confidence can make a deep run in this playoff?
Oklahoma.
Man.
Period. They have the defense that'll travel. I'm telling you, man, the thing with Oklahoma is this. What wins you games in moments like this? Like if your offense isn't playing well because you run into a brick wall on defense, what do you need to win? You need a really good defense. You need a team that doesn't make a ton of mistakes defensively. And you need special teams that is able to be reliable and also very, very effective. No one on this entire list, not just this weekend, but this entire list, has that more than Oklahoma. The highest part of the tallest part of their ceiling as a team is whether or not this dude that put up like 4,400 yards at Washington State a year ago, and a lot of people think could be a day one draft pick at some point when he decides to go pro, if he puts it all together, if that guy can figure it out, they can win it all. Like they are that talented on defense, and they are that talented in special teams. They have the best kicker in America, and they have one of the best defenses, if not the best defense in America. So I think shit seems real sweet right now for Indiana, because they're a very, very good team. But they had not faced a defense like Oklahoma's yet. And I think that you look at Oregon, same thing. So coming out of the top half of that bracket, yeah, I mean, I think if Oklahoma can get by Alabama, I think they have a very good chance to upset Indiana and figure out a way to get to the national championship.
You said you weren't going to stroke their ego. Then you just stroked it out the door.
I've been stroking this whole episode, brother. I'm not really a liberal, guys. It's just a joke.
Anything else before you get off here?
I used to be.
Anything we missed? Hey, what do you think about this? This is interesting. Eli Drinkwitz, new contract. If he wins 8 games, he gets an automatic 1-year extension. I mean, how Mark Stoops can you get, you know?
Yeah.
Basically, he just earned an extension for being a massive disappointment this year.
Yeah, I don't know.
He actually got 2 this year.
How am I a maggot? What did I'm a maggot? I just said I was a liberal. I don't. How unhappy are you, God Loves Comics? Like, how unhappy can you be?
I'll tell you what makes me happy. Here.
What's up?
We got JR. Shout out, JR. He gifted a membership.
Legend, cousin JR has done it again.
He gifted Smoke Mississippi. And then our legend, Steven Up. You love this guy, Chris.
Showing up for them boys in Tuscaloosa. It's Steven Up. Roll Tide.
Hey, gifted Thurman Merman. That's Chris's screen name. All Day Trey gifted Eric Crowley and Boomer B Dad. That's your dad. He gifted Justin Clayton. So what were you saying about making fun of Drink real quick?
I don't know. I got to go.
All right. You want to plug anything before you go?
Not at all. Just my butt. See you guys later. See you.
We'll be back later, a little bit earlier, with Steven. Steven had a little bit of a conflict, so we're going to have to go a little bit early. 5 p.m. Central Time, 6 Eastern. Tonight, we'll be back. Hopefully, no jerkins, no F-bombs. I think you know what you're getting from Steven. So tune in then. Later.
Hey, buddy, this beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.